Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Brought to you by Chevy Drive Chicago. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We're brought to you by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers, Chevy Drive Chicago. With Barstool Chief, I am Pat Boyle. Chief, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. You are misleading the audience. You are not with me. I'm missing seeing that beautiful head of hair sitting right across.
Well, we've got a game tonight at the United Center. Mm-hmm. Dropping the puck in about 5 or 7 minutes from now. Right after Cornelison sings that beautiful anthem. And the Hawks are coming off back-to-back blowout losses. 6-0 to L.A. on Saturday, 7-1 to Quenville's Anaheim team on Sunday. So they were outscored 13-1. This is like the first adversity that they've really dealt with this season. Your thoughts on the weekend that was? I won't get into Notre Dame and all the other things that are on your plate, but we'll try to focus here on the Blackhawks.
Yeah, you're just totally not getting into it. Just a quick mention and we'll move it along. But yeah, bad sports weekend across the board. I think this is something that's just going to happen every once in a while with an extremely young team where they have a West Coast swing. End of that West Coast swing, you get your absolute doors blown off against a couple of teams that will be in the playoffs. Anaheim, I think, is probably the biggest surprise in the entire league on top of the Pacific Division. Joel's made a big difference there, as I think everybody knew he would, but no one thought they'd be this good. But no matter what, you don't want to lose 6-0 and 7-1 back-to-back days. So there's no excuses. It's just I think this is the reality of the situation. I don't think it's some kind of indication that they're going to go on this tailspin down towards the bottom of the standings. I think they'll rebound tonight, but it was ugly and it was brutal. I turned that one off on Sunday pretty quick. So you had the Bears loss, and then you go into that, and you're like, that's a rough Sunday for Chicago.
Yeah, for a minute we were thinking that we'd have the possible hat trick because the Bulls were playing as well, and they were pretty much, other than the Bears were the closest as far as the scoreboard went with the way the Bulls and the Blackhawks fared on that day. So both of these blowout losses, so you had the 7-1 loss to Anaheim on Sunday. The other one that stuck out was that game against Buffalo in November. Both of those games came in the game two of back-to-backs. Mm-hmm. Now, look, everybody in the league plays them. The Hawks have actually only done it twice, but they've been crushed in the back end of each of those. Do you think that's a young team trying to learn how to, find their game when they don't have their legs, when they maybe have their B-minus game and they just need to try to find a way to stay in a game?
Yeah, I think that's a learning curve for sure for a young team. And look, they're not good enough defensively at this point. You know, they give up a ton of high danger chances. They're near the bottom of the league in high danger chances allowed. And I think when you're just a half a step slower and you're, you know, half a second late to a puck or not as hard on a battle because you don't quite have your legs, they don't necessarily have the structure in place to kind of keep those games close. And unfortunately, as much as we love the young talent on this team and they've gotten production from other spots in the lineup, but it's just one of those things where if you don't have the big dogs going, meaning basically Connor Bedard, they don't have a ton of depth across the roster to kind of drive things. When those guys play to a stalemate, you know, the depth guys play to a stalemate and you got Connor Bedard, you're going to win a lot of games. And with the goalies, you know, if you have a good goalie in Spencer Knight who's having a good night and Connor Bedard does his thing, and everyone else kind of plays with stalemate, you're going to win a lot of hockey games. And I think that if he's not going and the depth guys just are a little bit off of it, then that's a recipe for disaster, and we've seen that. And the important thing to remember, too, and I'm sure we'll talk about Sam Renzel, but, you know, Levshinov hasn't played a full NHL year. Renzel, you know, he's played 29 games or whatever it is this year. That's basically a full college season. inside of 3 months. So I think there's a lot of that going on with these young guys playing at the highest level for the first time. And there's going to be these dips in the season. There's different points where you hit a rookie wall. I don't think it's uncommon to hit a rookie wall at this point in the year, especially when you're on a West Coast trip. So it's kind of it was a perfect storm to get run out of the building back-to-back nights. And it is what it is, but I expect them, you know, after 3 days rest and being back home, a little home cooking tonight against the Rangers on national TV, I think they'll be ready to go.
312-332-3776 is the number to get a hold of us. You know, even though, Chief, that they've had this slide, they've gone 2-6-2 over their last 10 games. They're still just 1 point out of the final wild card.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody is really creating a lot of distance in the standings. Everybody is kind of hanging around. You feel like they've kind of blown opportunities with their record. I think they're 1-6 in games that go beyond regulation. So you feel like they've let some of those slip away. But even with just 2 wins in their last 10, they're still right in the middle of the wild card mix.
Yeah, I think this is where they're going to be all year. If you look at that Central Division, you know, they're behind Utah. But Utah's got 2 games in hand. So they're a point behind them with 2 games in hand. And then they're going to be battling with Utah and the Jets kind of for fourth place, I think, all year. I think the Wild, Stars, and the Avalanche are running away with the league. And then you look at the other teams in the Pacific, you know, the Oilers are going to come. We'll see if the Sharks have the staying power. But I think they're going to be right in the middle part of that Western Conference standings, battling for that last wild card spot for the majority of the year. Whether or not they get it across the goal line, it remains to be seen. It's a tall task. I have a hard time believing that Connor McDavid isn't going to go on in some kind of all world tear at some point and get that team towards the playoffs too. And we've seen what we've seen out of the Kings. You know, they're kind of a predictable bunch, defensive veteran team. Like, they're going to be in the mix all year long too. So we'll see if Bedard and some of these young guys can push the Hawks towards the playoffs. And, you know, they've had a few injuries. Like, we know Bertuzzi's missed some games. He's come back. He's been productive. But losing Burakovsky for a stretch, that hurt them. So it's like they have more depth than they've ever had. But it's still not the type of team that you're like, you can lose a top six guy and not feel, you know, some of the bumps of that. And, you know, and we talked about Renzel's college season already happening. Same thing goes for Ryan Green. Not that he's been bad or anything, but it's just like, this is a reality of having one of the younger teams in the league.
So the Rangers and Blackhawks going at it at the United Center. They're going to drop the puck here in just a few minutes. You mentioned Sam Renzel being sent down earlier in the week, along with Landon Slager. You know, I think the Hawks were hoping he would get back on track the way Levshinov did, being sat down as a healthy scratch a couple of weeks ago. His ice time had been dwindling. I think he played 9 minutes against LA. You're trying to, you know, develop a top four player, a top two defenseman, and you're playing him only 9 minutes and you're not putting him out there in high leverage situations, it's probably best to send him to the AHL, let him play a boatload of minutes in all situations. And as Blashill said, hopefully he can find his swagger.
Yeah, I mean, I read the quote from Blashill about Renzel. I think he used the word, I think the sentence, the phrase, find his swagger about 6 times in 30 seconds. So that's definitely a part of Renzel's game, is like he has to have confidence with the puck on his stick and not be thinking too much out there. And he just did kind of look lost at times. And look, he's a big, lanky kid at 6'4". He can really skate, but he's not overly strong. Like, he's got to fill out and have a man body to lean on guys. He's got to learn how to have a better stick and position himself better defensively. And yeah, if he's only playing 9 minutes and they've been carrying 7D most nights this year, then he's going to get squeezed. And if he's going to get squeezed and he's not playing well and he's, you know, thinking too much and he doesn't have the confidence, there's no harm in going to Rockford for, you know, a month or two or three. I don't even care if it's the rest of the season, if that's what they determine is best for Sam Renzel long term, because he does have to learn how to play in his own end better. I would like to see him get more power play time than he would be getting here at the varsity level, and penalty kills too, because they didn't get him you know, obviously his offense and his skating are the things that made him a first-round pick and a prospect that everyone's excited about, a prospect some people hand up, bet him to win the Calder at a long shot. If he's not able to do a lot of those things right now, then yeah, send him down and let him take his licks down there and make sure no matter what happens, he's getting, you know, 20, 22, maybe 24 minutes a night on a given night and really get those reps and then come back. And it's, you know, when Artie was struggling at the beginning of the year and all the Demidov crowd on the internet was like, oh, I can't believe Davidson did this. Well, you know, two games doesn't make a season. And then you saw Artie kind of find it. And I think the difference between Artie and Renzel is that Artie is kind of, he was born 30 years old. Like, you look at his hair, you look at his body, like he was just one of those guys that was physically mature enough for the NHL right away. And he's also, he might have just permanent amnesia, where it's just nothing really ever bothers him. And right. If he makes a mistake, he's right back out there. He's a happy-go-lucky kid. Nothing really gets in his head. Like, you never have to worry about his swagger, you know, like the way that you might with Renzel, where he's got to have that confidence and trust in himself. So I think this is going to be a positive thing long-term for Renzel. And look, we saw that happen. The AHL is there for a reason. We saw it happen with Vlasic, too, where he spent a good amount of time down in the AHL, and then he came up and he's ready to be, you know, a top pair, kind of top four shutdown style defenseman. So obviously he's a different player than Renzel, but he can certainly benefit from some time down there.
We hear it all the time, you know, that the development is not linear. And I think my expectations were off like yours as far as where Renzel would be. I felt like those first nine games we saw last year when he came over and he finished his career at Minnesota, I thought, like, this guy is, you know, he can skate, he can move the puck, he's joining the rush at the right time, he can defend. I was like, I mean, I didn't see this coming. And I just thought it would continue to grow at a gradual pace here in his first full season in the NHL. And I think what you mentioned a few minutes ago about the jump from the collegiate workload to the National Hockey League is vast. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're playing 2 to 3 games a week in college, usually Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and that's it. Yeah. And they're off the rest of the time, and they're not obviously playing the talent level. And I think we saw it with Bedard in years 1 and 2, finding his legs when he's 2 or 3 months into the season. I think he struggled in that area. And I brought it up to him a couple of weeks ago, and I said, you know, are you helping some of the guys like Nazar and Renzel and others who are playing their first full year in the National Hockey League and are making the jump from either juniors or the NCAA about how to, you know, handle this workload? And he said, yeah, we talk about it all the time. So I think it's a real thing. I think it was part of the reason why 98 had such a dip last year in just what we saw from him. And I think it takes time to figure out how to manage your body with this workload of playing 4 games a week, in many cases.
The travel.
Yeah, the travel, 3 and 4 nights, and playing guys that are, you know, thumping you in the corners and, the Jacob Trubas of the world, and not, you know, some guy from Wisconsin or Michigan.
Yeah, and I also think part of this equation is the Blackhawks are trying to win. Okay, like we said off the top, like they're still in contention with that that last wild card spot. And so there's less room for error in development at the NHL level this year, simply because the team's too good to be like, we have to float Renzel out there and he can't help us win and we're trying to win, because you owe it to the other 22 guys that are on the NHL team to be like, hey, if you're a good enough team to compete every night, we can't just be focused on Sam Renzel's development. We have a place for that. It's called the Rockford Icehawks. So I think that's part of the equation too.
All right, time for our first break here on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Coming up at the top of the hour, NHL insider Frank Saravalli will join us. We'll get his thoughts on he was at the Board of Governors meeting in Colorado this week. We'll get the buzz on what he's hearing about Bedard possibly making Team Canada for the Olympics. And, you know, what's going on with the Milan Olympic rink? We're hearing now it's going to be completed February 2nd with the first Olympic Games being February 5th. This sounds like
just
a train
time.
Wreck. Yeah. I mean, so we'll get the latest from Frank. That's at the top of the hour. But your calls first, 312-332-3776. Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago. The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
All right, it's the Hockey Show with Barstool Chief. That's me and Pat Boyle joining us remotely. We got Blackhawks going up against the Rangers as we speak on TNT. Looking pretty good, looking sharp in the first period. We have Frank Saravalli coming up at the top of the hour. But for now, we're going to go to your calls. Let's take Elliot in Elgin. Elliot, you're up.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks, Elliot.
On a side note, regarding Saravalli, I just think, like, before the season, him saying that Renzel was not going to spend a second in the AHL was just kind of unnecessary to say and a little ridiculous, and it really kind of put a little added expectations on him that really otherwise wouldn't have been there. So I didn't think that was that was just kind of out of left field. That's not why I called. I heard you on a podcast recently say that you would like to see the Blackhawks bring in Quinn Hughes. Mm-hmm. Sure, I would too, but I also wouldn't, because I know that would probably cost the Blackhawks like a good portion of their farm. They would have to blow up the farm to get him, and probably other things that are currently on the team. And I just think if you did that, you'd essentially be the Canucks East. So my question to you is, what's the max that you would like to part with to bring in Quinn Hughes?
Yeah, it's a good question. Look, I think every team in the NHL would love to have Quinn Hughes on their team, and he's awesome, as you obviously know. So that was more what that comment on, probably the stretch. I'm not sure where I said that exactly, but yeah, Quinn Hughes on the Blackhawks, I can get on board with that. In terms of what I'd give up, probably not enough to get that deal done. So I think I'm more on your side of things. I do think he would fit great somewhere in that top four, top pair, running the top power play. But in an ideal world going forward, you have Artie and you have Renzel to kind of run those power plays and be your offensive spark plugs for the future off of the blue line. So I don't know if he's like the perfect fit for Chicago any more so than he is for somebody else. And you're right. They'd have to give up a ton, and I don't know if I'm ready to give up Frondell or Nazar, or I don't know exactly what it would cost. If it was picks, I would certainly give up a couple first-round picks, a couple second-round picks, and maybe Korchinski and something else. Like, I don't know. I would pay a lot, but I wouldn't want to give up on, let's say, like a Frondell or Nazar or somebody like that. So I'm guessing that the Blackhawks will not be in the running for Quinn Hughes, even though it would be so sick. And you know, you see the reports that he's, quote-unquote, 95% gone. So unless there's some kind of extension, too, which is the other factor, he's always rumored to, like, be joining his brothers either in New Jersey or they all combine to go somewhere else. So that's a pipe dream, not much more than that.
Yeah, Chief, Quinn is my – if I had to pick a Hughes to start a team with, Quinn would be the first one off the board for me. I love what he brings to the sheet each and every night. I think he's a top three defenseman in the league. That being said, it also happens to be the strongest area on this team at the blue line. And I'm with you. I'm not willing to give up a ton of assets to already my deepest part of the team. Now, do we have a Quinn Hughes right now? No, I don't think we do. And I don't, as great as Renzel and Korchinski and Artie. You know, Vlasic and yeah. Artie have, you know, all these, how we've seen bits and pieces of their development so far, I don't think any of them are on the trajectory to be a Quinn Hughes.
Correct.
But I am, and I'm not ready to deal like the Nazar types. Like there's just no way, you know. If anything, we've got redundancy on the blue line, but I don't think, like you said, I don't think we have enough to make that deal happen.
Yeah, and they've the reports are that they want guys who are close to NHL ready. The only guys that really fit that category are obviously Nazar, and then I think you can probably lump Frondell into that. But then, you know, you're losing two guys who you have penciled in for your top six, and like you said, they don't have a Quinn Hughes on the blue line, but they got some guys who can do that job. And they don't really have, you know, an Anton. They don't have a lot of Frondells in the system, obviously, the number three overall pick. And Nazar, though he's been slumping a little bit, like that speed and the role he's played for this team, he's getting better all the time. So, yeah, I'm not ready to make that move unless it's more – unless they move off of that NHL-ready thing and they're interested in a pile of draft capital and maybe prospects who aren't as close as a Frondell and certainly a Nazar who's already in the league.
What are your thoughts on where Kevin Korchinski's at? 22 games so far for Rockford. He's got just the one goal and the 13 assists. So, you know, less than, you know, half a point per game. And, you know, he was the player that we thought was going to be a stabilizing force to the blue line. And it may just take a little bit more time for him to develop. But your thoughts on Korchinski?
Yeah, you know, you hate to write somebody off at this point, but it's also at the same time, it's hard to imagine him jumping Artie or Renzel long-term as guys who are going to run your power play. So I do think it's he might get the squeeze. I don't know if there's a spot for him unless he really rounds out his game and becomes a great two-way player. That's not his strength at the moment. I don't know that it ever will be. So I could see a scenario where he's moved out at some point for somebody else, but I can't say. I've watched a ton of Rockford Ice Hawks games. I don't know if you have, but I don't think the numbers, especially for defensemen, tell the whole story. So we'll see. I bet you he gets games at some point this year, but it's just, you know, it's a crowded blue line back there at the moment, you know, even when they were playing with seven defensemen. So I have a hard time imagining he's going to have a big, big future here, but we'll see.
The latest on Connor Bedard and making Team Canada for the Olympics when NHL insider Frank Saravalli joins us next on The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief
on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Back on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. The Hockey Show is brought to you by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy Dealers, Chevy Drive Chicago, with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle, and we welcome into the show NHL insider Frank Saravalli. You can follow him on X at Frank_Saravalli. You can see him on CHSN, our Blackhawks coverage. Frank, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good, Pat. Mr. Chief, good to be with you guys again.
You were in Colorado this week for the Board of Governors meeting. What were some of your biggest takeaways from those meetings?
Pat, just how eye-opening this construction timeline is for the arena in Milan. Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly shared with us on Monday that the targeted completion date for that arena is February 2nd. And so you look at the calendar and you go, isn't the women's tournament supposed to drop the puck on February 5th? I mean, we don't really have any margin for error left on this construction project. And to say, okay, it can be completed on time, sure, I'll buy that. One source who was recently over there for a site visit said that the reaction from the Italians has been like, hey, guys, the tournament doesn't start until February. Why do you need it to be done in January? And they all kind of got a chuckle out of that. But the completion is one thing. For me, the ice surface and the conditions at both of these arenas is a total different thing. And the temporary nature of it is what's so eye-opening, that these aren't permanent ice surfaces. These are just for a couple weeks for the tournaments, and that part is definitely concerning.
Is there a real possibility that the NHL will not allow their players to go out, that they'll pull out last second? I saw a quote from Matthew Tkachuk on his podcast saying, I don't give a bleep, I'm going there. And Brady replying, we're going there no matter what. So is there going to be a mutiny from the players? Like, they're just going to show up and go? Or is there a real situation where the NHL and the NHLPA put the kibosh on the whole thing?
Well, Chief, I mean, the truth is, if you told these guys that they'd have to play in slush on Lake Michigan in 70-degree weather to contest an Olympic gold medal, they'd do it. So that part, it's going to be out of their hands. It's going to be way above them. And I know the NHLPA, in sending $1 billion worth of player contracts to this tournament, are definitely concerned. And so, look, you're asking me, is it possible that they don't go? It's a greater than 0% chance that there's an issue here that prevents them from playing. I think everyone is optimistic. They're crossing their fingers, hoping that everything comes together on time and in suitable fashion. But the fact that we are 3 weeks today from rosters being submitted and we don't have clarity, there's still no ice surface, no boards up in that arena, I don't know how anyone could say with any degree of certainty that they're definitely going.
What is the backup plan? I mean, is there, have they talked about if Bill Daly or the NHL goes out there in the next 2 weeks and, you know, things are not satisfactory, could they move it to a different site?
So the official answer is they have not talked about it. And part of that is because the NHL is trying to put on a good public face. They're trying to not pour gasoline on this situation that really they're not even partner to. This is an IOC event. This is a $100 billion organization that should be able to figure its way out of this. And the NHL doesn't have any control or say in the matter other than perhaps withholding their players. Now, the unofficial answer is I have to believe that some big brains in the New York offices and headquarters of the NHL have been in a room together trying to figure out a contingency plan for what if. Because, look, the season schedule, they're going on pause no matter what. There's no putting the toothpaste back in the tube, sources indicate. They're not going to be able to reschedule games over that break. So Gary Bettman said to us at the Board of Governors that his idea for a holiday is not 2 weeks in the middle of the NHL season. So what can they do? I mean, I've heard everything from, hey, let's move these games across the border to an arena in Switzerland. I've heard, let's go to Sweden. I've heard, could the NHL possibly pull this off in a last-ditch effort and play them in North America? No one is willing to provide any sort of veracity to any of the theories because they're not there yet. But I think we'd all be pretty naive to think that they're just sitting there twiddling their thumbs in New York.
Yeah, the United Center is not that far from Little Italy in Chicago. So maybe just get the best of both worlds and play it here.
I'm down with that. Yeah. Give me some chicken parm and let's go.
Speaking of those teams, there's two players that I am and everyone else in Chicago is very particularly interested in to see if they make USA and Canada. One of them is Patrick Kane, and the other one is obviously Connor Bedard. Where are those two in terms of their status with Team Canada and Team USA, respectively?
I think Connor Bedard has played his way on to Team Canada. Like, I don't know how you leave him off. His campaign has been nothing short of brilliant. He has transformed himself, his game, his energy, every facet of how you view him with his play this season. And if you're going to take the Team Canada brass at their word and say that, hey, at orientation camp, you go out and have a great season and we'll find a spot for you. Like, he's been one of the five best players in the world so far this season.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're Canada and you need a goal, you need a clutch moment, something to happen, you'd hate to see them be, unless you're an American, one goal short and having left Connor Bedard at home. And that's my theory. I think it's a much more difficult case to make for Patrick Kane, as much as everyone admires his experience, his energy, and what he brings to a team. I mean, he's revered in that program. I have a hard time finding a spot for him based on his even strength play. You know, if you wanted to say to me, hey, we're going to bring Patrick Kane for the experience and as a power play specialist, I could be on board. I just think these roster spots are so precious that I don't know that he's done enough in his limited sample size this season to really transcend some other players who have had special years. Like a Jason Robertson, for instance, is a great example. Not on last year's Four Nations team, he's a guy you're not leaving behind. So who heads to the cutting room floor?
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, it's just going to be tough because, you know, Matthew Nyes probably has to find a spot on that team too if they're going to play a little bit big boy hockey. But I don't know, Kaner, you know, almost a point per game at 37 years old. Maybe as a guy who loves the game and loves Patrick Kane, I'd love to see him on that team. I almost feel like a point per game should be good enough to get a guy with his resume on that team.
So, Chief, you know him probably better than I do. If you went to Patrick Kane and you said, you're going to be our 24th player, you're not going to be in the lineup to start the tournament, is he saying yes?
I think he would. Yeah, I think he would.
Hell yes.
Okay.
He would. Absolutely. I think he would sign up for that. And the other thing, too, that we don't talk about is the shootout and how big the shootout is in the early rounds of the Olympics. To have him on your bench and as a power play specialist, but able to go out there in the shootout and work his magic is also another asset.
Yeah, look, I think you can make a case. My point is that his case is a lot longer to make than some of the other guys that have been in the mix.
NHL insider Frank Saravalli joins us on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. You can see his work on Victory Plus TV, where you projected the Canadian Olympic roster and how it would look. You thought Bedard's played his way on already. Do you think Celebrini has as well? And I'm curious, what was your last forward on the team and your first two forwards that didn't make the cut for Team Canada?
Yeah, that's the hard part. The two cuts that I have are Wyatt Johnson and Mark Stone. And Stone has been more of a health thing than anything else. It's really hard to leave those Selke caliber guys off of your team. Johnson has been a force on the power play. He's been a great playoff performer in Dallas, a clutch scorer. So that was difficult. Look, in terms of last on, I didn't really necessarily think about it that way, but I do think Macklin Celebrini makes it. I think his case is a tad stronger than Bedard because of the defensive responsibility that he brings. I'm not overly concerned at all about Connor Bedard and his defensive prowess when it comes to the Olympics and whether or not that would be a factor, because you're going to play him with guys that, if he makes it, guys that have that capability and responsibility, and you're also going to get a guy who's going to be hyper aware of exactly what's happening in the tournament, max effort. I think you're going to see someone that's incredibly engaged as you have all regular season. So I think Celebrini is a special player. I think he's Sidney Crosby light. I think he is the most defensively responsible forward of all of the top 10 scorers in the league this year, which says a lot for his age and how complete he is. And so I think he's in a really good spot and probably just ahead of Bedard on the pecking order.
The other thing we talked about before we brought you on, somebody was asking about Quinn Hughes. Have you heard anything about the Blackhawks calling, or is this kind of wings or bust at this point?
I don't think it's wings or bust. I don't think it's devils or bust, and I have not heard anything about the Hawks calling. Look, it's been a really interesting week in the Quinn Hughes saga, so to speak. The best way I can sum up my understanding of it is that when the Canucks sent out their memo to all 31 other teams 2 weeks ago on Monday, letting them know that they were interested in moving some vets to get younger, that teams were picking up the phone to call and say, hey, does that include Quinn Hughes? And as is standard business in the NHL, when they were met with, no, we're not interested in moving Quinn Hughes at this point in time, they just registered their interest and said, hey, when you get there, keep us in mind. We'd like to be at the top of your list. And so that, to me, is the extent of those conversations and where they went. I have zero evidence right now that the Canucks have presented any sort of posture as being willing to move Quinn Hughes. And until that changes, like, I think they're trying to be more competitive to try and convince him to stay than go the other direction and tear it all the way down.
Frank, any other tidbits that you gathered in Colorado Springs from the Board of Governors meeting?
There's no site for the draft this year yet. That's one. Two is lots of interesting bids for the 2028 World Cup of Hockey. They're going to have one European site and one North American site. And three would be that there was a presentation from one of the assistant deputy directors of the FBI about gambling and the integrity of the game. And just a stern reminder from the commissioner, Gary Bettman, to the Board of Governors, which should trickle down to GMs and coaches and players, which is don't bet on hockey. If you're going to bet, bet legally, do it in the correct jurisdiction. And beyond that, the league is so intertwined with its gambling partners and monitoring all data in real time in conjunction with the FBI. Don't be stupid enough to think that if you are a constituent of the NHL, that you're going to get away with anything that's suspect or on the wrong side of the line.
Frank, great stuff as always. Look forward to your next appearance on the CHSN on Blackhawks pregame show. Keep up the great work. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
It's Frank Saravalli, NHL Insider on ESPN 1000. Back to wrap things up on this edition of the Hockey Show after this.
You're listening to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show
with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
Call us or tweet your comments to at ESPN 1000. The Hockey Show.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Back on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, we're brought to you by the Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers, Chevy Drive Chicago. Our video streaming on YouTube and Twitch is brought to you by Get Covered Illinois. Need affordable health care insurance? Enroll by December 15th for January 1st coverage at getcoveredillinois.gov, the state's official marketplace. Barstool Chief, I am Pat Boyle. No score between the Hawks and the Rangers after 20 minutes at the United Center. Hawks outshot the Blue Shirts 10-6. Your thoughts on what Frank had to say? I'll just start with the leave it to the IOC to continue to run the Olympics like it's a circus, and to have the venue basically opening 2 days before or 3 days before the first games are being played it's inexcusable.
Yeah, it's really sad because I think everyone has been waiting for, you know, NHL participation in the Olympics, and the appetite was there after Four Nations too. But I'm trying to be positive. I want to say it's a win-win for the United States, because if you win, you go over there and win the gold medal, it's a gold medal. If you don't win, well, it was never really a fair competition anyways, and the ice was terrible, so it doesn't really count. So that's a good way to look at it. It's a win-win. But yeah, it's really It's quite disappointing. He had me kind of buzzing about the possibility of it being held at a North American site for 2 weeks. That would be incredible if you could have that, you know, in Chicago or New York or somewhere else.
That'd be amazing.
The marquee Olympic event is actually in America. That would be great. Sign me up. I'd love to see that. So we'll see how it goes, but it's, I really hope they get it figured out. It's a joke that they had all this time to get the thing built, and they're like, what? It's not ready yet. Who cares? So that was like their attitude that he described from the Board of Governors was pretty funny to me. It's like almost stereotypical.
And the other thing, Chief, too, is the quality of ice to stand up to multiple games a day. Like to not have any testing on that. Usually, yeah. IOC events and international events, they want the venue like 8 to 12 months ahead of when the actual tournament is set to begin, so that you can work through some of the hiccups that tend to happen when new buildings are opened. And there's going to be zero opportunity for that in this Olympics.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to me that it takes the NHL like less than a month to build an outdoor rink on Wrigley Field,
right,
or Dodger Stadium or wherever else, and the IOC and the Italians can't get it done in, what, 6 years? So very disappointing. I would be very angry if this cost us NHL participation in the Olympics. But because I think everybody in the whole world, diehard hockey fan, casual hockey fan, that is the marquee event of the Winter Olympics. When the NHL players are involved, I don't really pay attention to the Olympics unless the NHL is involved. I can't tell you the last time. I don't know where it was. I don't even know where it was last time. Korea? I couldn't tell you. It just doesn't matter to me unless the NHL is participating. So I hope they get it squared away here.
All right. Are you with Frank that Bedard has played his way onto this team? Or do you think that, yeah, statistically and the eye test tell you that he should be on this team, but in the end, that the brass of Team Canada is going to probably lean?
Yeah, I think
you know, Connor might come up short.
Yeah, I think we lost you there for a second, Pat. But yeah, I think he has to be on the team. At some point, if he's one of the five best players in the world, how is he not one of the 20 best players in Canada? So whether he's a wing or a center, it doesn't matter. And we talked about it last year where he just didn't have the competitiveness, the speed, all the bite to his game to be worthy of playing in like those USA Canada games last year in the Four Nations were a war. I couldn't imagine last year's version of him playing in that game. Now I can. Now I think he'll just push back and he'll be as competitive. He'll win the board battles. He'll do whatever it takes. And he has that offensive explosion. You know, and it's, you know, Matthew Tkachuk and Brady Tkachuk for USA talking, well, they're both still injured too, and you don't want to see anybody get injured. But I have a hard time imagining that, like, everybody who's kind of penciled into a spot is going to be there now. So I would imagine there's less drama about those last spots than there seems to be right now just because of how the NHL season wears on people. So hopefully that's not the case, but I think Bedard will be there. I think Celebrini will be there. They are some of the best players in the world, so they have to be on that team. And that is, you know, TJ Oshie is a household name with moms from being on, you know, the Today Show and stuff. So if you're trying to grow the game and shine a light on your new stars, how do you leave your bright new toys sitting at home for a marquee event, especially when they've earned it? It's not like, to me, I don't think those two guys are bubble guys. And I love Mark Stone as much as the next guy, but like he's pretty long in the tooth, and he's not exactly fast. And I know he brings a different element with the size and the defensive stuff. But it's not like Bedard and Celebrini aren't stoned defensively, but they're not slouches either. Like they've really kind of stepped up their games. You know, Celebrini's always kind of had it. I think he's been even better in that department this year. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Sharks are right there with the Blackhawks in terms of points either, because they've both kind of set the tone for their respective teams, and they're good enough offensively to earn a spot. And it'll be a major storyline if Canada is losing games 3-2, and it's, you left these two offensive juggernauts at home. They have to be on the plane to Milan or wherever they end up holding this tournament.
Thanks to our producer, Aiden O'Connor, and our guest, Frank Saravalli. So the Hawks and Rangers, no scores. The second period's about to get underway. You still feeling good that the Hawks are going to end this two-game skid and bounce back with a win at the United Center tonight?
I don't know. Not the way Igor played in that first period. He's got zeros in his eyes tonight. So a couple of 10 bell saves.
Barakowski, yeah.
Yeah, Shesterkin, he's looked incredible. So we'll see, but I like to jump in the legs. They look fresh. They look like they're back.
All right, Hawks and Rangers going at it. We'll see if they can pull one out. The Hawks are in action on Friday in St. Louis, and Patty Kane and the Red Wings are on the west side on Saturday night. That's going to do it for this edition of the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. For Barstool Chief, I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.
You're listening to the Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app, 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.